We continue to read from the Sermon on the Mount, and today we get the principle of discernment that Jesus teaches. You can judge a tree by its fruit. He repeats it over and over in these few verses. Good trees bear good fruit, rotten trees bear rotten fruit, and that's how you can tell whether it's a good tree or not. Not by its appearance, but by its fruit. So this is a principle of discernment, a principle of, or a criterion of judgment. The other day we talked about whether we can judge or not. Well, here's another example in the scriptures where Jesus says, well, yes, you can judge, and this is one of the criteria on which you can judge. Judge by the fruit. Now, of course, he's not just talking about trees. He's talking about also people and movements, phenomena, cultural events, historical developments, all sorts of things. We can judge them by their fruit. Today is a national holiday in honor of Eid al-Adha, which is a Muslim holy day. I'm sure the Muslims have ways of observing this day. I don't really know much about it. I think it's some kind of celebration, but since we're not Muslim here, we can use this day, as it's very nice to see many people come to Mass, so use this day in a way that bears good fruit. So if I see more people praying, more people drawing close to God, more people loving more, or then I say this is bearing good fruit. I had a little distraction as I was reflecting on this, because it's odd to me that we have a national holiday and shut down everything for a relatively small minority, religious minority. I don't know the number of Muslims in the country. It's about 10%, right? Anybody know? How many Muslims in the country? It's something like 10%, 12%. I was thinking, well, I wonder if there's any majority Muslim country that has 10% Christians who have Christian holidays. I think that would be good fruit. So if one of the good fruits of this observation in the Philippines say, okay, here's a Christian country that out of respect for a religious minority can extend a holiday, maybe a Muslim country, a Muslim majority country, could do the same, say Turkey or I don't know. I can't think of any countries that have 10% Christians. Anyway, it's a distraction, but I say, it's related to this question of bearing good fruit. Bearing good fruit. We can judge a tree by its fruit. What good effect comes from decisions or from events, policies. Now, the Muslims celebrate this as the day to honor the sacrifice of Abraham, which we also honor. In fact, we're going to get the story of the sacrifice of Abraham, that is of his son, next week. We're here we happen to be reading the whole story of Abraham in the book of Genesis. We're in Genesis chapter 15. The story of the sacrifice is Genesis 22, so we'll get to that next week. The odd thing, odd to me anyway, is that in the Muslim tradition, the son who was sacrificed is the first son, Ishmael. Is that right? Ishmael. And because Isaac wasn't born yet. So according to the Muslim tradition, that's the son who Abraham was asked to sacrifice. And the greatness of Abraham is his faith, his trust in God, his obedience to God. Yeah, so we the three religious families all honor the faith of Abraham, the Jews, the Christians, the Muslims. But it's very, I just find it puzzling to think that the Jews and the Christians follow the tradition that Isaac is the one who was being sacrificed, Isaac who's the child of the promise, and the Muslims think it's a different son, the first son, and I think they regard themselves as the descendants of Ishmael. I don't know for sure. But the reason why I think it's odd is because for centuries, more than 1,000 years, the religious tradition was about Isaac, and all of a sudden in the 6th or 7th century, Muhammad comes along and says we had it wrong all this time. So I'm sure there's an explanation for that according to their tradition, but I would wonder, how could God allow his people to be deceived for that long a time and then suddenly get corrected? We don't have that in Christian tradition, that God would leave people in error such a long time. We do have in our tradition that God does not reveal fully for a long time. It takes generations and generations for God to unfold his plan for us. But he doesn't lead people into error and then correct them centuries later, at least not in Christian tradition. Okay. So judging a tree by its fruit. Let's look at Abraham. Here in Genesis 15, he's still referred to as Abram because his name has not been changed. But it's the same man. I think the Muslims call him Ibrahim. Same man. He's a historical figure. And he is the foundation person because he is the first one to whom God revealed himself and the first one who responded with faith to God. So here's Abraham experiencing another vision from God, God revealing that he has a great plan for him and his descendants. And Abraham asks the question, well, I don't have any descendants, so what good is all this? He's not doubting, he's just asking, what's the fruit? Judge a tree by its fruit. I don't have any children, so you can give me all kinds of blessings if you want to, but it's going to end up in the hands of my servants, my heir, my steward. Note that this in itself is already a correction to the modern fixation on amassing wealth. Abraham has all the money. But that's not going to do him any good, and it's not going to be a lasting blessing unless he has descendants. Whereas the modern error is better off to have more money and fewer children, even no children, if it's going to cost too much to have them. Now, most people would not go that far as if to say, I won't have any children so that I can have more money. Most people don't go that far, although some people do. But many people go to the extent of saying, I'll only have one or two because it's better to have more money for the children that we do have. That's not the attitude of Abraham. And I think it's a challenge to modern times to evaluate the value of children and the value of money and possessions. Now, every family has to make its own decisions, of course. There's no judgments. And it is true that it's much harder and more expensive to raise children now. Even in our lifetime, it has changed a lot. So people have to make some difficult decisions. But the fact is, children are much more valuable than money and possessions. That's absolute. So if it's a question about whether to have more stuff or more children, children are the ones. Those are the greater blessings and bring greater joy not only to the family, but also to the descendants. Okay, that's just part of the lesson here. But what I think we can focus on now is how God decided or how God revealed himself to Abraham. See, God has an eternal plan and he knows everything. So that's not the hard part. The hard part is how does he convey or reveal to people with limited minds and limited understanding, limited experience, what this great plan is. That's why I say this takes generations. It takes generations for God to keep expanding the human mind, the human consciousness to the greatness of his plan. So since Abraham's the first, he has to do some very fundamental things to make it clear that he really has something great in mind for Abraham. And what he does in this reading, and this is really a crucial a threshold, is the establishment of the covenant. A covenant. Now, covenant is this sacred bond, this sacred promise, this commitment to another party. A covenant existed in the culture of Abraham at the time. The reason why we have to stress the covenant is because this phenomenon of a covenant, of a bond of unity, is a preparation for what we call the new covenant. So if you don't understand what a covenant is or what the old covenant is, how can we appreciate the new covenant in the blood of Christ? How can we understand the Eucharist or appreciate the Eucharist if we don't know what a covenant is? So this passage, this experience of Abraham, is really important so that we get this idea of a covenant. Now, how was a covenant established? It was done with this ceremony of cutting up animals. Now, we read this and we say, what is this weird, cutting up animals and birds, all, you know, birds eating the animals and Abraham falling into a trance, and it just seems so weird to us. It didn't seem weird to Abraham. That's how you made a covenant. And the idea is, just as these animals are cut in half and separated from each other, we who are establishing this covenant are pledging ourselves to be faithful to it, or you can cut us in half. It's a kind of a life, putting your life on the line. I'm entering into a bond with you that is till death. That's a covenant. Till death do us part. That's the covenant that most people understand in modern times. Marriage, the marriage covenant. It's a very serious, sacred, lasting bond. Now, Abraham knew that that's what covenant was, but no one ever heard of a covenant with God before, because how can God be cut in half? And how can anyone even understand that kind of a relationship with God? Well, God initiated this. God made this covenant. He started it, and he chose Abraham. And so he has Abraham witness these two strange, like mystical figures passing between the cut up carcasses, a smoking fire pot and a flaming torch. They represent God. We can't see God. I can't comprehend God, but we can see that fire and smoke often represent God. They're symbols of God. Fire because of the light and the heat, you know, the fire in the burning bush, and fire coming down on the apostles at Pentecost, and fire is a very common use. And then the smoke because of the obscurity of God. We can't see him. We can know that he's present, but what we see is dark to us. That's smoke. Okay, but the whole point is, Abraham understands that God and he and his descendants are in this sacred, permanent bond, the covenant. Part of the promise is, I will give to your descendants this whole land. And Abraham believed what God said. This is the key line. Abram put his faith in the Lord, who credited it to him as an act of righteousness. His faith made it possible for him to accept, and he fully accepted this impossible promise of the Lord. Okay, now, if that was all there was to it, we would never know anything about it. But the fact is, that tree bore good fruit. That tree of faith bore good fruit, not only in the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and the 12 sons of Jacob, and all the way down the line, but in Jesus Christ. See, the good fruit of faith is the coming of God as man. The best fruit from the best tree is Jesus Christ. So let's go back to the gospel here. The principle is a good tree bears good fruit. So if we see good fruit, we know we've got a good tree. Well, the good fruit is Jesus Christ, and the life of Christ in us is good fruit. If we see that in action, okay, good tree. Now, a lot of people think that, since we're talking about religions, you know, Jews, Christians, Muslims, a lot of people think that religion as a whole has borne a lot of bad fruit in human history. Wars, divisions, as if religion is really the problem that has weighed down human history. a lot of people think that the Catholic Church has borne a lot of bad fruit, and that makes it a bad tree. We have to be honest and say that, yes, in human history, there is a lot of bad fruit, and a lot of bad fruit has come from people who claim to be acting in the name of God. That's true of the Jews, it's true of the Christians, it's true of the Muslims, it's true. It's true of the Catholics. There is bad fruit. The conclusion is not that belief in God is a bad tree. The conclusion is that people are not living according to what they believe. We would be much worse off without faith. If we think it's bad now, we think there's bad fruit now, imagine what bad fruit there would be without the revelation of God, without the covenant of love of God, without the redemption of Jesus Christ. It would be impossible for us to imagine how much worse things would be. So let's not put the blame on God. Let's take the blame on ourselves and say, if we've borne bad fruit, it's because we haven't been faithful to the covenant. How can we be faithful to the covenant? We have to rely on the Holy Spirit. Now, we have something that Abraham didn't have. We have a lot more than Abraham had, because the new covenant has been revealed, and the blood of the covenant has been shed for us, and the Holy Spirit of the covenant has been poured into our hearts. And so it's possible for us, if we're willing to submit in faith, if we're willing to accept, if we're willing to enter into the covenant, it's possible for us to bear very good fruit. Very good fruit. Doesn't mean that the world will see it, or maybe we ourselves, we might not see it, but let's welcome this extraordinary possibility that divine fruit can come forth from ordinary human trees. That's us. That's the church. Let's welcome in faith all that God has in mind, all that God has done for us, and all he wants to do for us, so that we ordinary human beings will bear good fruit in the world.